You're listening to Fakeologist Audio Chat. To connect to our always-on and always-streaming audio chat, go to fakeologist.com/audio chat. This is a new and exciting way to communicate with fellow fakeologists from all over the world. Each day we compress and post the day's audio into a file that can be big or small. Discover new voices and ideas that talk about media fakery like you never did before. Please search for Fakeologist Audio Chat and Fakeologist Main Show on your favorite podcast app. To listen to the live stream, go to fakeologist.com/radio3. Now, on with the audio chat.
All right, we're in the live stream here. It is Saturday, November 24th, 2018. We are just coming off the fart number 9, I think. And we're waiting for Napoleon, Velo said. We're just talking about some stuff after the show. We're over here in case anything interesting comes up. Hi, Napoleon.
Hello, Web. How are you?
I'm great. You sound better over here.
As always, trying my best. My computer is probably still settling down. I've just had to reinstall certain aspects.
How do you install certain aspects?
You might use a different...
Well, I don't fuck about with anything that I touch in the real world. I just reinstall Chrome and reinstall Discord.
Right. All right.
It seems to speed my computer back up. Every now and again, it'll shut down. Every 9 months, it just shuts down for some reason. So then I just reinstall the latest things.
Do you reinstall Windows?
No. Just Chrome and Discord, and then download Discord via Chrome.
Do you flush all your cookies and things in Chrome? That can help. There's an option in Chrome to flush.
I do everything like that. But like I've said in the past a few times, and people probably listening going to know what excuse it is, I did spill a bottle of red wine on it about 3 months before I quit drinking. So it's about a year old now, this computer. So yeah, and pretty much the day, 2 days into
it. Is it a laptop?
Full bottle of red wine. Yeah, it's a Packard Bell laptop.
Okay.
So yeah, but
I'm going to say if it was a desk.
How did you buy a 1990s laptop a year old?
it's just when they bring out the latest genetic Packard Bell and that's what it was. Remember, I'm in England, so we use old names. You know, so literally, yeah. But there you go. It's just what it is. It's I'll tell you the number on it. It is. Hey, Packard Bell. That's gone. Can't remember. Sorry, mate.
Yeah.
By the way, what Discord server do you use? You know, you can connect to different voice servers. I think I'm US East. What are you connected to?
I use Australia because that's where most of us are located.
Okay. I'm wondering if that affects my sound. Or if I sound different.
Yeah, you'd be on slightly longer latency than everyone in Australia. We can talk quicker. If all the Australian people can talk quicker on an Australian server. It's all done through CDN. So it's just the routing. It's just where the routing's being done, that's all. Because, you know, there's no mixing being done in the cloud. It's just routing the packets to the people that need them. So it's quicker for us in Australia.
Yeah. So your packets theoretically don't leave the continent. They stay local.
Theoretically, although supposedly within the last week there's been this whole news report about somehow the Australian internet, some Chinese company was rerouting every bit of Australian traffic through their servers to record it all for later analysis.
Oh, that's...
But yeah, like in theory,
that's
everyone...
To your point.
Yeah, it's a mainstream article, so it wouldn't surprise me. Everyone talks, and their packets are sent to the server. So when Napoleon and you talk, they send to the server goes, okay, Joel needs to hear these, and it routes them to me. So everyone receives copy. That's how Craig can record everyone separately. It's looking at all the different packets, going, okay, this one's from this person, put it to that channel, this one's from that person, put it to this channel. So everything's tagged and identified as where it's coming from. So it's really, Discord's just a routing engine. It's not really doing any mixing or audio stuff. But, it works quicker if I have it here locally.
Anyway, you were saying, telling everyone to listen to S-Town, which is a great podcast from the This American Life people.
I think you brought up Serial podcast because we were discussing the validity of the stories and how true it was. And then it just reminded me that S-Town was produced by the same people. And I found that, whether it's true or not, I found S-Town to be just a very captivating podcast in the production values and the interviews, everything they did. I enjoyed it very thoroughly. And that's a few years old now, but I mean, it's still up there. Anyone can go search it and have a look.
Yes. I just discovered it a month ago, and I agree. It's fantastic. And all I was going to say to you regarding it is I thought it was misnamed. I think S-Town is not a great name because, number one, I didn't even know what S-Town meant until they explained it's an abbreviation for Shit Town, which, of course, they're not going to put as the title for marketing reasons. But I thought if they called it the Fire Gilder, which I've never heard of fire gilding, that would have left that title a mystery for the whole broadcast, and it would have strung the listener along a little more because they were going to probably wonder, why is it titled the Fire Gilder? Because you don't get to know about that until the last episode, and it's completely relevant to the story.
No, I agree. I think even putting S-Town as the title, like that's already a censored title. Why would you put something that's censored? It just doesn't make sense.
No, it's stupid marketing.
Mm,
no, it's bad marketing. They made a mistake. But yeah, it's well worth. Not a lot of people make it all the way through a series. That one is worth getting all the way through.
Well, really, I got all the way through it because it was captivating. Like, I listened to the first one. I was already hooked. I had to listen to the next nine or whatever it was.
Yeah. And I posted a link on moreab.fakeologist.com, since we're on the Fakeologist audio chat right now. That's my non-fakeologist-related material, and it doesn't get updated all that much, once in a month. And anytime I can't make a link to Fakeology, I put something over there. So if you want to listen or go read, I've got audios and other things over at moreab, moreab.fakeologist.com, a sub-blog.
Yep. That's more ab.
Every now and then I get
fakeologist.com, not moron.fakeologist.com.
Not moron. Yeah.
Yeah.
But sometimes you get tired of listening to media fakery and fakeology stuff. It is good to hear what else is going on in the outside world to be set your
I mean, I started a new job 2 weeks ago, and since I've been doing that ties up most of my day. So I found that I haven't invested that much time in catching up on Fakeologist or anything. I haven't really listened to much of the most recent stuff. I think, you know, once the week's sort of gone by, I can sort of stomach doing the Fart Podcast at fartpodcast.com. And that sort of is enough for me. I do that show. We come on, we have the after show here, and we have a bit of a chat. And then, I mean, that's enough of the investment of my extra time after I've already worked a full work week.
Yes, I agree.
So, I mean, I don't see the world in any a different way. I still know what's going on, but I'm not going to invest myself in every little media story. I just have to, if you hear about that stuff from people around you, I mean, you just got to grin and bear it, right?
Yeah, you have to let a lot of it go. Let a lot of the bad stuff just sail by your radar and not worry about it. Yeah, great fart broadcast tonight. And when do you think that'll come out?
Probably sometime tomorrow. I've got tomorrow free, so I can do the edit and release it tomorrow. I haven't been in a big rush with some of them. I've just sort of let it. I've just held some of them over and just sort of trying to build up a bit of a delay in the release so that I have time to get them the way I want them. So this was sort of part of the process was to delay them a bit. But last night going into just a few minutes past the hour tonight or today, yeah, it was quite a good show. So that one, because there's so little editing needs to be done, all I've got to do is tune up the sound and the tracks and then mix it down and release it. So that'll be up relatively quick compared to the others.
Yeah, good. It's entertaining. It's lighthearted. It's full of Australians. What more could you want?
Well, that's our market. We don't. I mean, if other people around the world want to listen, that's great. But, I mean, it's very, it's so Australia-centric.
Yeah,
I think the idea of doing something very tongue-in-cheek, like, I mean, we called it Fart. I mean, what more can you say? The whole, it's not there to be serious. We've been trying to get Dave J on. He was supposed to be on tonight, but then I think it's too early in the morning at the moment for where he is. So we'll try to tee that up, but someone like him, for example, we don't want him to come and tell us too much about fakeology and all that. We want him to come and have a good time and let's see some of the more social side of his personality rather than the factual side. So that's sort of where we're headed with it.
Yes.
And I'd like to think that maybe it's something that if someone came across in the iTunes directory, they might listen, and even if they're not hoax aware, you could still enjoy the show and enjoy the sort of banter and what's going on, and maybe it opens some people's minds. Who knows?
Yeah, there's got to be more to Dave J than just no one died, nobody got hurt.
Yeah, well, when we had that debate where he started off with Spiro and then the rest of it ended with him arguing with Rick, I mean, you can tell whatever he's picked up in the Navy, he's a very quick-witted, funny individual. So I'd like to see that part of him sort of come out on the show.
Yes, yes, me too. Definitely a great, pretty good mind. I would call him a great mind. A lot of stuff in there, and he has a lot of experiences, and therefore stories.
And that there, the stories, that's the point. It'd be great to hear some of his story. Like, he could be we've had him as guests. Like, I've heard stuff with him being a guest on John Le Bon, and I've tried to do interviews with him on Fakeologist. And when you focus so heavily on the conspiracy culture, the stories don't really shine through. Whereas with this show, what we're doing, hopefully we can just get some fun stories for the sake of fun stories. And that's what we're about.
Hello, Matt.
Who else we got here today? Let me go ahead.
Sorry about that. I had to check a few things.
Hi, Matty. How are you? Matty's back. You got your audio up?
Yep. Everything okay?
You're coming through well.
Okay.
Were you still chatting to Frank, were you?
No, I was planning my day. I had to talk to my wife, and we had to figure out what we're going to do with the rest of the day before I get lost in a fakeology hole here.
that's not hashtag me too, is it?
And that's my name of my wife. It's spelled MITHU.
Yeah, I know the name. I'm just saying there's no hashtag in front of it, though.
No. It's all been a long, long psyop to prepare her introduction into English.
MITHU, what's the ethnicity of that name?
Indian. Bengali.
Bengali, wow. That's East India.
Yeah, that's right.
I got that wrong. Is Bengali Bangladesh or no?
Well, it's more than that. It's also that whole area, really. But Calcutta is also, that's the language then. The language is Bengali. And her father from Calcutta.
Is it north or south India? Which one's the wealthy north. One? North, north. So the north.
I don't know which one's the wealthy one. I don't know. But that's where the British Empire settled. First of all, they turned Calcutta into some sort of. It looks British. It looks Victorian if you go there.
Is that right? I did not know that.
Yeah, incredibly Victorian. I've never been, but I've seen pictures and things. And they built these massive palaces and things and really stamped the identity of the empire on Calcutta, big time.
Oh, okay.
And now they've gone,
when I think of Calcutta, I think of poverty and the Ganges.
Yeah, I suppose so. The poverty is because of, it was usually, the result of the British Empire and its tactics. I think they had, various different famines and things, but that was, you can trace that back to the actual empire and its and the way it organized everything. Sure. So, yeah. So I haven't been there, so I can't really talk about it. It's hot.
Now, is your wife born there, or is she born in Europe?
She's born in Germany.
So she's half
Polish, half Indian, but very German, and works for German radio. That always confuses people, but it's good.
She works for what? Did you say she works for what? German what?
German radio
German radio. I thought that's what you said.
Yeah, yeah. West German Radio, VDR it's called. And she writes cultural stuff for the German radio and also for various, magazines and all sorts of things.
She's in the media.
Yeah, she's an author as well. She's written two books. One called Vulva, the cultural the invisible history of the vulva, the cultural history of it. Yeah, it's really interesting, and she gets some amazing points. And then another one about
link.
Huh?
Can you post a link to vulva? Did you say vulva? Isn't that an anatomical part of a woman's nether regions?
Yeah, feminine.
Well, the idea is this is the amazing thing, right? She's she grew up, and when she was growing up, she's a feminist, and she's looking around for a book about the vulva, because the strange thing about being a woman is you can't actually see your genitals unless you get a mirror and look, you know. So she found out there weren't any books about the vulva as such. In fact, she found out that most people call the vulva the vagina, but that's the vagina is what's inside the body. And the vulva's what you see right on the outside, yeah? It would be like mixing up cock and balls all the time, you know? And
well, it's like mixing up lips and mouth.
Yeah. 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 Right. That's it. That's a good, very good. And then she went to see if she could find any books about it, and there was no books about it. She goes to the library, no books about it. No one's written about it. So I better write it myself. And it's a really interesting history. I mean, there's, you know, all sorts of...
Can I interview her?
I'll ask her. Yeah, I think so.
I would like to do an interview on vulva.
Yeah. When she that book that did pretty well, and
the thought just occurred to me. If that goes well, and she can come on the fart podcast, and we can talk about pussy farts.
Wow, you really conflated two disparate.
I don't know. If you're not too prudish, I mean, it was quite funny, to be honest.
Do you have some sound drops from the Howard Stern show on the pussy quarter?
I'm only on my phone at the moment. I haven't got them handy.
Oh, I'm saying, did you listen to those on the Howard Stern show? I think he had a pussy farter on.
Oh, no, he had a whole competition. It was an hour-long championship of who could do the best the best queef.
There you go.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, they're queefs. Nah, they're queefs, yeah. Queefs and quarters.
Yeah, right.
Well, the thing is, we time it right now. We should wait till next year, because and she's written a second book. She wrote a book about rape, and again, she's done a lot of good work there, and sort of showed the cultural history of it, how it's used and abused, and how it's manipulated in the media, etc., etc. And
her name's Me Too. What else could you hope for?
Yeah, Me Too, Zanyal. And the book's been translated into English. We translated it, and that'll be coming out in March. So that's when you should do an interview with her. We'll do. She'd be doing loads of interviews anyway.
Wow, that's fascinating. We don't use the word rape in North America anymore.
No.
That word is gone. No, do they use it in Germany?
Yes. Well, it's a different word in German. Of course, we don't use the word. It's Vergewaltigung, which is anyway an interesting word, because there's Vergewaltigung, which means rape, and I learned that word before I learned the word there's another word which is Verwaltung, Stadtverwaltung. That's basically your council and council organizations, and you know. And then he said to me, "Oh, you'll have to go to the Stadtverwaltung." And I thought, "What?" Sounds like Stadtverwaltigung. Sounds like, are they going to rape me? Very similar. It's about your woman would have her something stolen from her if she was raped. You see. She had her honor stolen.
Oh, top of the hour.
You're listening to another hour of Fakeologist Audio Chat on Fakeologist.com.
That's so annoying, having just something come break in all of a sudden, play stuff. I'm not used to that. Over on fartpodcast.com, you know, it's all planned breaks. It's weird.
I know. It's more annoying that it's you or me. Your production, my voice. God, that's annoying.
Both of us doing a double
shut
teaming
that guy
in the
up
audience.
Yeah, I've had that too. I've been kept awake by my own music. But, this can happen. But, but you can get it.
Don't interrupt. Continue your thought. So about rape.
Yeah, well, yeah, the Anglo-Saxon laws and everything was that it was like basically theft. Everything was theft. Yeah, for the way the Anglo-Saxons did it.
Property theft.
yeah, everything was poverty. Even murder was theft. You robbed someone of their life. Yeah. And
yeah.
And seen as a woman, especially in a certain times, sort of woman's honor and whole, her, you know, she's there to have children and everything. If she's been raped, then there was this. Well, Mita explains it really well. She goes right back into antiquity with the rape of Lucretia. You know, and the thing was, for the Romans, if a woman had been raped, the best thing she could do was kill herself, right?
Oh, my God.
And then, later, the rape of Lucretia, she's tricked into rape, and then she kills herself. She does this long speech, and she kills herself. Now, so, it was the first cultural thing. If a woman's raped, she's supposed to kill herself. But then Christianity came along, and you were not allowed to kill yourself. So, what can we do then? So, then women were expected to basically go into a convent or, you know, be basically emotional cripples for the rest of their life. And, you know, they've got to show that although they can't kill themselves now, they would have liked to if it wasn't for Christianity. You know, basically, they're supposed to suffer. And this is a myth, you know, it's like a car crash. You know, a rape can be like a car crash. It can be traumatizing, yeah, but people get over it. It's not a problem, you know. Some people don't, but
yeah.
That's not saying that you know, you don't want to, again, you know, she's got a lot of trigger warnings there. She has to be very careful when she talks about things. I'm not saying some people, obviously, yeah, you're not saying that it doesn't happen or anything, but there are also, on the other side, there are a lot of women as well who said, look, you know, this is not a problem. I had a car crash. It wasn't nice, but I'm over it. You know, I don't want to suffer the rest of my life. I have to be this stereotypical rape victim that you see on TV all the time that never goes out of the house and is scared of sex and you know, has been completely traumatized, and basically there's this myth that men are, you know, the coiled sexuality, ready to strike at any time with their always erect penises, yeah, and women have got to kind of scuttle around the place protecting themselves, you know, and she blows all that apart. It's not true. That's not the way we are, and even the statistics show that's not true. When it comes to rape, the most rapes happen in male prisons, you know, so even that, nobody ever talks about that. Yeah. So.
I would like to talk to her about it because I have knowledge of people that were raped, and I think it is life altering. I don't think you can recover from it. So I might have different views just by what I know from the experience I know of.
Yeah, there was. I mean, that was her shitstorm. That's what happened because she goes around talking about this. And obviously, a lot of the people have experienced something like this. They open up. They start telling their stories. So she gets a lot of stories. She's talking to a lot of people, and there were quite a few people that were coming and saying, "Yeah, they felt that the word victim doesn't work. Because then it puts you, and then you make you feel like a victim, and you." You can't get over it because you're expected to be a victim. In English, they managed to use the word survivor, right? So you're not a victim, you're a survivor, so you can get over it, yeah? But in Germany, you can't use the word survivor because the word survivor in Germany automatically denotes someone who survived the Holocaust, right?
Right.
So you use the word survivor, überlebender, that means so they can't use that. And then some of these women said, well, could we use the word experiencer, but erlebender. It was an experience, whether it was a bad experience, a good, whatever, it was their experience, and then it's neutral, there's no value added to it, yeah? And Me Too, people said, you know, these women came and said, could we do this? And Me Too sort of wrote about that, and wrote about them coming to it. And then, it was really interesting, she got a email from someone, and it said, enjoy the shitstorm, yeah? And she, what? And then off it came. Like, then the shitstorm came. Yeah? And from kind of, from a feminist side, there's like kind of what I call the control opposition feminist side, yeah? And the right wing, you know. Oh, so you think it's rapes fun? I hope somebody rapes you and you can have fun with your experience and all this sort of thing. And really nasty stuff. And they, you know, she's a public person. They know where you, oh, we know where you live and everything, you know. And all these people, I mean, really nasty stuff, and you think, yeah. And also the way the guy came, first of all, and sort of enjoyed the shitstorm. They'd all lined it up. They knew that it was coming. They knew, you know. It's incredible. And then you find out, and it was really interesting, you find out that there's a magazine here, the big feminist magazine here, Emma, who's so linked to the right-wing guys as well, because they were all linked together. And there's another feminist lot called Störenfriede the disturbing Fridas, they're called. And they don't even read. You think they must be algorithms or something, because obviously they've not even read the article, you know? It's like they've got...
They look for trigger words.
Yeah, because they're criticizing something that's not in the article, you know? They haven't read it.
They just use the article as a springboard for their own agenda.
Yeah, yeah. See. But what she also got
it's
an awful lot of
excuse
things
to talk about their agenda.
Yeah. Right, but that was really quite... And the woman, Alice Schwarzer, who runs this the feminist magazine, Emma, I mean, again, and she even got caught putting her money in Swiss bank accounts, and how she got all this money in the Swiss bank account, and all sorts of things did come out, but she's still there. She's still there. She's the one who pushes all this. She pushes all this. For me, it's like lack of closing down on freedom. You're not allowed to do anything anymore, yeah? And Me Too sort of showed that, for instance, they were always talking about all these, I don't know how many millions of, or hundreds of thousands of prostitutes that would be brought in for the World Cup in whenever it was, or the European Cup whenever it was, yeah? And the actual figures that the police released then 2 years later was something like 11 prostitutes that they found.
Nice number.
Yeah, you know what I mean? But it's something, yeah, it's funny that I go for 11, but it was a very low number. It was under 20. It was a joke. Right? But then she pushes these big memes, yeah, and all these terrible news, trafficking and everything. And then there are women who'll come. There are women sex workers here. They have a kind of union. They have a kind of, they have to try and protect themselves because, and they come along and they say, no, it's not like this, and I do this because I want to do this, and I've chosen to do this. And the Schwarzer will say, well, your mouth tells me one thing, but your eyes tell me something else.
you are a victim. Embrace your victimhood.
Yeah, right. You know, and the poor girls can't do anything, and they've made it really difficult for the sex workers in Germany, who used to have it relatively good, but they've brought in this new sort of, it's called the Sex Workers Protection Act, and it doesn't protect them, it attacks them, makes things, life really difficult for them. And generally the whole kind of, even though it's massively in our culture, it's in all our films, it's in our classics, it's all over the place, you know, it's such a taboo. And she did a great program, for instance, about the relatives of sex workers, you know. And it's like, oh yeah, sex workers have got mothers and brothers and sisters and even kids sometimes, you know, and all sorts of things, you know. Nobody wants to think about that. Nobody wants to think about them as human, you know. So I say sometimes, like, we're a minority. I've always got a bit of a heart for minorities.
And the outcasts, people that are discarded by the mainstream society.
Yeah, or don't agree with mainstream society in some way, or would like to change it, or have to push against it to just live your own lifestyle, live the way you want to live, you know. And you always pressed in. Like I said before, I wouldn't have been here in the 30s, you know.
So what is her thesis in her book, Rape? What is the actual thesis?
Well, she's what we call here a cultural scientist. So she literally goes back through time and looks at all the memes. I mean, she's not far away from a good fakeologist in that respect. And she looks at all the memes through time, and she looks at all the statistics, and she reads and listens, and you know, and the whole thing, and correlates it out and writes it all out and really studies it and then comes to her conclusions. Yeah, and so there's a lot of good information there about this phenomenon that we call, you know, rape, and how it's played out in various different cultures over the years, and why we've got the beliefs about it that we have, and why we deal with it the way we deal with it. And you know, for up until, I don't know, still in a lot of countries and most countries, rape is basically a man's penis in a woman's vagina. That's the only thing that can be rape. Men can't be raped, yeah, which is absurd. Or yeah, you can't, you know, of course men can be raped. And you know, so that's what Germaine Greer comes out with. You know, she comes out with this stuff, you know. But no, everything's so nuanced. This is the problem. I think a lot of these subjects now when we're starting to talk about them, we realise it's so complicated and it's so nuanced, and there's the tendency to say, I can't be bothered. Give me a nice black and white, you know, soundbite that I can shoot off. That's my opinion. Yeah. And it's getting harder and harder to do that.
Again, so her thesis is that rape is, you can recover from it, or, and it's more widespread than being limited to man on woman?
Yeah. Well, first of all, the thesis, that one thing that this definitely comes out, the less egalitarian, the more hierarchical the system or the country, the more rape there is. So in a completely hierarchical system like a prison, it's rife. Yeah?
Oh, okay.
So, yeah, power enables misuse. Yeah, that's clear. So if you've got, and the less, the more egalitarian, the more the people are happy and they're earning money, the less rape there is. That is very clear, right? So the idea is to create, if you're creating a culture that where people can have a voice and where people can make their money and they can, you know, raise their families, then you won't have rape. Very, very little of it, or less, you know. That came out of it. Sure, some people find it very difficult to get over it, but it is, you can get over it. That's another point that came over. There are lots and lots and lots of people. Oh, here she is. Oh, thanks. We're talking about you.
How do you think it's related to fakeology?
I think it's related to fakeology in so much as she shows where the memes and the beliefs of our present day, you know, contemporary thoughts on these subjects, where they come from, and how they've been developed, and you know, she uncovers those aspects. I think that is a kind of fakeologist mindset, really, to look at things and not accept them as they are, and to ask questions about them,
yes,
and then to sort of get another take on it. Yeah.
What does she think of your fakeologist research?
Oh, my guys, as she called you for a long time. You're going to be talking to your guys. No, that's the interesting thing. I always tell her about what's going on here and these extremes, yeah? She never, you know, we can discuss all that. And she says, that's great. I mean, I don't have a problem talking to her about any of these things. Yeah? And I think she finds it interesting. And what was interesting is that, so to speak, you know, to a degree, it was miles away from each other. But over the years, I have the feeling that we're coming together more and more, you know. As if you started from two ends and now it's starting to sort of meet in the middle a little bit, you know. I mean,
Is she agreeable to a lot of the fakeologist research from 9/11?
I think so, yeah. I think she, you know, one of the things I tell her. I mean, obviously, then as a media personality, she's not going to be able to say this out loud or anything like that. She's not going to be able
right.
to. I don't know how much she can discuss this. Like I told you about 9/11, the difference between 9/11 and all the other psyops that happened was you felt the hand of power come down on the media. Yeah, she wasn't. After 9/11, she mentioned 9/11. Not in any, you know, I think it was more a case of since 9/11 I've been, you know, thinking about this or not. It was nothing, and it had to go. It wasn't, you weren't allowed to talk about it. Nothing. Yeah? It came down from above. Do not mention 9/11. Yeah? Not even the official story.
So it went into the Holocaust category in Germany.
Yeah, definitely, yeah. And that we've got a very much loved newsreader, you know, who's been around for years and years, and they sacked him because he said something about, you know, Osama bin Laden and George Bush being the same type of character, the same sort of war-like character.
So you're saying the newsreader went off script because they're scripted?
No. Yeah, no, I believe this is how they did it. They, in inverted commas, sacked him. 2 months later, he came back quietly. But in that 2 months, it was like, whoa, if they can sack him, they can sack anyone. So everyone self-policed after that.
He was made an example.
Yeah, but I think he was in on the example. How about you? Want a two-week holiday, Horst? Yeah, no, fine. Right, okay, we've got a two-month holiday now or something, you know?
Yeah. Right.
So, interesting. Yeah. And it might have been real, but it doesn't matter in the end because the effect is the same.
Yes. Oh, fantastic. That's interesting. So she can't, if she wants to get promotion in the media, she cannot talk about 9/11, the Holocaust, the moon,
no.
Space agencies.
No.
All that is verboten.
Yep. You don't
see
that.
I just wanted to use the word verboten right there.
Verboten. Yeah. But I mean, what we do then, and what we've always done, is we put it into fiction. You know, she might make a joke about it sometimes, but we put in. She writes. She's written three, not four, I think, radio plays, and three of them are a series. It's Ruth Cohen. It's a Ruth Cohen crimi. Crimi is like a mystery in German, or a Peter Meter mystery. And so it's very surreal, but we get everything in there. The first one even had the no plane theory in it, and we've got people discussing it. You know? And that was right as I found it. I found it. You know, for me, it was just, oh, this is great. This goes in the story. Yeah. So I didn't. It was just a wonderful story straight away. So I won it, and we put that in. So you put them in, you work them into, and it is, that is really the case, you know, that then, so people are trying to put something together creatively, and you go around the internet, and you'll pick things up, and you do. So conspiracy theory feeds into the films, and then they look at the films and go, look, it's a kind of figure of eight to a degree in a lot of cases, you know. Creatives are picking from the conspiracy theorists, and then conspiracy theorists are looking back at the creatives and saying, see.
Interesting. The circle jerk.
Yeah. Now it gets the themes up. But you see, what you want to look at what are people interested in? What am I interested in? And if you're creating something, and you always put in what you find interesting, don't you? If you can. It's like, you don't want to be boring, so. Yeah. So we had everything in there. It was really funny. We had a nerdy German, you know, who was really pissed off with all the English anachronisms and my hap and lie hap, and he kept changing them into German anachronisms. And it was very funny. And, you know, it was a very analytical kind of slightly nerdy guy. No, it's a pity you can't understand German, because it was funny, very funny at times, and a lot of fun to do. So that's why, you know, I always look at these things in stories, and there's always an element of, like, that's an interesting story.
Interesting. So she wrote a play using some conspiracy concepts?
Yeah, the first one. Yeah, the first one. We had, basically, we used the Montauk story, you know, and Pina Munda up here, the old, apparently they were, that's where they were working on the UFO sites. And basically we took the idea of the chair from the Montauk story. You know the Montauk story? They had this chair that...
No, I don't.
Well, the story is they had a chair from a UFO, yeah? And with this chair, they could sort of look into the future. They could go into the future. And the story was that after 2012, they couldn't see the future anymore because all the timelines split off, yeah? So this was all the big run-up to 2012, which you didn't get. Conspiracy theory was full of 2012. It was all about the run-up to 2012 until 2012 didn't happen, yeah? So... Red Ice used to have a countdown counter on there, yeah, on their website, countdown to 2012. So we took that idea of
any particular day.
Yeah, January the first. You know,
first.
Yeah, so he went down to New Year's.
I never heard of that in my life. That was a German thing or a European?
No, Red Ice. You know, Red. It wasn't. No, it was, everybody was doing. No,
I never heard of it.
Yeah, because you got into everything after 2012, didn't you?
But I never heard of Montauk at all.
There was a post-2012 hole. You wouldn't believe what people were saying. You know, you got your David Wilcock and people like that saying, after 2012 we'll be telepathic and we'll be, you know, we'll move into the fourth dimension. Who knows what the world will look like and all this stuff. Of course, nothing happened, so...
Oh.
And everything was geared up. So all the big sites, Red Eyes, Veritas, and all these conspiracy theory sites, they were all geared up to 2012. And then when it didn't happen, what are they going to do? Half their guests have now been, you know, have just talked too much.
Discredited,
yeah. A few people like Swerdlow and things like that, yeah. This is where I got a story from Swerdlow about the Montauk chair, right? He's a real fearmonger. He really was. Everybody's been taken over, and only he has the exercises to help save you. But so we took the idea of the chair, and there's this guy, and he said, "I've got the chair. He's gonna throw it open to the public." And the day before that happens, he gets murdered. So, it's a murder. It was a murder mystery, yeah, but on two different levels. And so in the end, you get the murderer, And the murderer also has a meltdown and starts talking on conspiracy talkies. It's the atomists. But in the end, you find out that the person who's arranged it all was actually the narrator, which I really like. You know? She sort of figures it out slowly because the narrator keeps moving people around, and she realizes that only he had complete control all the time. Yeah? So that's the sort of things we do. And then you can put all that stuff in there if it's fictional, you know, so if X-Files, I mean, you can plong it all in and play with it, basically. That's what you're doing. But you can't do it factually. You can't say, if you start saying this is real and I believe in it, poof, then you're David Icke, right?
Yeah. Oh, interesting. Oh. So she can be aware of it, but she can't accept it or broadcast it.
No. No, they're just teams they wouldn't sell. It's not that so basically she has a... she's been doing it a long time now, but basically you run a pitch by the producer called Redacteur here, yeah? So we've got lots of producers and you can... they know what they want. You know, with her, it's a lot of it is cultural reviews of books and things like that. So look up to get... We get all these magazines from every publisher with their new books, loads of them. She goes through them and anything's interesting that she likes, she can offer that one. I can review this book. And then the redactor will say yes or no, you know? So it always goes through a producer, and you just wouldn't get it through. It's not a hard sense. It's not, you just don't get it through then. When you don't get it through, then it doesn't run, then you don't get any money. So simple, very soft, but simple, but effective.
That's money is the control mechanism.
Yeah. So, I mean, you're doing a job for someone else, so you don't... And certain things aren't... You can't say them. She pushes the envelope quite a lot, but... She seems to be okay. She just knows how to push the envelope just enough. She talks well. That's the other thing. That's the trick, isn't it? If you can talk well, if you can... She can... She's the sort of person who can... Look up a subject, you know, for an hour, and then afterwards talk to you at least 10 minutes as if she sounds like a complete expert.
Oh, she sounds like a smart woman.
Well, she is.
So. That's good. That's good for you.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, I think so. But so we can talk about all these things. She sees parallels, and maybe it's because we're both a little bit on the edge of society, me being, you know, coming from England and so living here, slightly outside.
Yeah.
And, you know, she's one of these people that are always being asked, where'd you come from? Like, you know, I was born around the corner. Yeah.
That's funny.
Yeah. You can't ask that question to me. What are you?
Yeah, that's a nasty thing to say. That's why I just said that. I just said, what's their ethnicity? That's a more palatable way of asking a question about maybe some of their cultural background. It's not divisive.
Yeah, I think these days they don't bother asking. I mean, it's like taxi drivers. If I have a good job, I'll take a taxi. And I'm amazed at how turned on taxi drivers are. It's you haven't got long. You've only got 5-10 minutes in a taxi. Driver,
yeah.
You start talking to them, and yeah, they can go along. They don't believe the media, any of them.
Yeah.
So, how far they go?
Well, maybe a lot of them might be listening to fakeologist.com while they're driving, so they know.
Maybe these are mostly Turkish guys and Greek guys, and you know.
So oh, I see. Yeah, they probably. They believe even less just because they're more used to being lied to by their governments.
Yeah, and that's the thing. It's also the case of when you move countries, when you travel, it really does help you to see that,
yeah.
Oh, that's the way they do it. Oh, they do it this way for the Russians. Oh, they do it this way for the Germans, you know, tapping into their narratives and their social mores and their cultural, you know, preferences. The Nike have just did this advert for Russians, you know. My God, it's so... it's like the Soviet woman, you know, they're doing it, the Soviet woman, you know. Amazing. And then And then putting it over as if it's the new rebellious woman. It's so old hat. And that happens in also these things that Me Too organises. They talk about, for instance, there was a woman the other day also showing it. You know, they bring on all these dancers and all this new stuff, and as if it's really new. It's not new. It's just basically regenerated Fred Astaire and Ginger Rogers. You've still got one main dancer in the middle of all the other dancers that you focus on. There's nothing new there. There's nothing new there at all. They might be wear sexy clothes, but it's not rebellious and it's not new. In fact, it's the other way around. It's hierarchy.
Patty, just let me give me one sec here. Maybe Velo can talk. I got to take a break.
Okay. I'll just finish that thought then. Because, you know, it's completely hierarchical because they're all making the same moves. And, you know, the choreographer has come along and said, you move like this and you move like this and you all do it synchronistically together. Yeah? That is fine.
In a world so much different than the one you thought you knew is where you'll find yourself once you've listened to Fakeologist Radio.